Welcome to PodTech.net, Juniper Network Sound Off Series. I'm Jennifer Jones here with Sanjay Berry. And Sanjay runs the Emerging Technology Group's products, which include the company's leading security and attack prevention products. He holds a lot of patents. He's got an incredible background. And we're here to talk about security and attack prevention. So Sanjay, my first question is really about content security, and it's really becoming very important today. So what is content security?
Sure. The bottom line is, traditionally, most networking equipment has looked really at what I would say is bits on a wire, packets on a wire, layer 2 to 4, as they say. Content security really says that's not good enough. What you need to understand is the actual application. You need to look into, for example, is someone instant messaging someone? You need to understand what that means. Decode that, and then look for malicious content. Only then can you really stop the threats out there nowadays.
So it ties into the whole idea of threats and all of that. So explain that a little bit. There are common terms out there like worms and Trojan and some of the other terms that like phishing. But let's first start with worms. Can you explain that term to me?
Sure. Worms are really what people would think of as, how can I attack you without you doing anything? So how can I, as an attacker, attack your enterprise and not require your users to necessarily do anything? It's a very simple concept, and that's a very simple definition of a worm. But frankly, that's why when people say worms spread very quickly, they're so malicious. Well, why do they do that? Simply because they attack a vulnerability in software that's out there. To attack that, I don't require the user to double-click on something. That's, for example, for antivirus or viruses, that's the big difference between worms and viruses, is worms hit you, don't require you to do anything, attack you, bring down your network. Viruses, nothing bad happens until that user in the email double-clicks on it, and all of a sudden something happens. So
what's the difference between that and a Trojan?
So a Trojan is somewhere, I would say, in the middle. Often a Trojan, those familiar with the story, of course, back way when of the original Trojan, is a Trojan sits on your laptop or desktop. It's just sitting there, not doing anything, then one day it wakes up. And when it wakes up, that's when it unleashes its power against your network or against your users. It's really a ticking time bomb. That's really the best definition of a Trojan.
But now, how does it get there?
How does it get? It could get there through many ways. It can get there through a worm, which says, I'm going to exploit this vulnerability, and I'm going to open up a hole in your network, and then I'm going to transfer a file in. It's a Trojan. Or it could say, I'm a virus. I'm going to come in via email. And you're going to open it up, and it's going to install some file in your laptop or desktop. So my point there is, there's many ways for these things to get in. There's no one way. I could bring a USB token into my desktop, into my enterprise, stick it in my laptop, Trojan gets on my network. I could get an email. I could surf to a website. So many attack vectors, so many ways people have to get these things in. What people need to focus on is, A, stop them from getting in, but B, you know what? They're going to get in.
Well, that's pretty scary. So what do you do? I mean, how do you combat them?
Exactly, and this is where we talk about multiple phases of protection. To say, your first phase is to say, let me stop everything bad from getting in, right? At the perimeter of my network, let me stop worms, spyware, Trojans, viruses, through many different technologies. Let me stop them from getting in. Well, that won't stop the guy who brings his laptop home, hooks up to his DSL line, and brings it back into your company. So things do get in. Second phase is, when they get in, detect that they're in, stop them from spreading to your branch offices, to either other users, and then clean them up. Right, that's kind of the second phase of what we always focus on is A, prevention, but then as well containment. Right, contain the threat once it is in there.
So moving on to the prevention and containment, what do you do to contain it?
The one thing to realize is that preventing spyware is very different than, for example, containing the effect of something like a spyware or a worm or a piece of virus. I like to touch on spyware because it's a hot topic nowadays, and I'll give you a good example. So how do people get spyware? Well, they surf to a website and maybe a peer-to-peer website. They download a file, and unbeknownst to them is spyware attached to that. Sits on their laptop. It's in the enterprise now. If you had antivirus or IPS, you would be able to stop that from coming in. Once it's in, though, it's not going to transfer a file. It's not going to try to spread to other users. All it's going to do is try to capture your credit cards or your passwords, sensitive data. When it goes back and transfers that data outside of your enterprise, it does that via normal network protocol. The only way to stop it is to actually look for specific pieces of spyware and say, hey, I know what this piece of spyware is going to do. It's going to transfer a credit card back. let me look for all credit cards and where they're coming from, and let me stop them from going out. So it's not an easy process, but it's a process where if you look at every single technology out there, spyware, adware, Trojans, each one, once they're in, try to attack you in different ways. And if you focus on that, focus on all the different sets, you can stop them.
Definitely. Pretty scary. So what's been the most fearful experience you've ever had, where you really sit there and you go, oh my gosh, I've never seen this, and what do I do about it? And then what did you do about it? What's the solution you actually came with?
Sure. So one of the most fearful things actually isn't something that's terribly malicious and taking down my network. Way back when you started getting emails and people started deploying spam solutions to stop email, a lot of people thought they were well protected. They said, hey, I've blocked most of the spam out there. I'm not getting any of these bad emails on these bad topics. They kind of became nations, saying, my email is much more secure now. Then started coming these emails, which looked valid. And they said, hey, I forgot your password for your bank. I forgot your social security number for your bank. And it's your bank, and it comes from your bank's name. And you say, oh, okay, let me click on it. Ask you a couple questions, and it goes, oh, you're done, thanks. The reality is, those are fake emails. Coming from somebody sending you an email acting like your bank, and basically, you are facilitating them stealing your information because you believe that that's a valid email. That kind of threat is one of the most, I think, recently definitely has raised a lot of focus, but one of the most powerful and one of the most damaging, because it can steal data that can open up and unlock all your personal data. And the way it does it is not by exploiting a software vulnerability, it's by exploiting a human vulnerability. And that's to say, hey, humans look at email and they look at the email address and they look at the title and think, hey, that's reasonable. But the reality is most of them nowadays aren't.
So how do you know a fake one? I mean, I've gotten a lot of those kind of emails too, and I've gotten a lot smarter about somewhat determining what's real, but it makes you paranoid. You don't want to open up anything like
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Like I said, multiple ways. Stop them from getting in. The people who send these emails, in many cases, they're the same type of people, the same people from the same location. We have, for example, worldwide networks where we track these people called phishers. We track their reputation by IP or by so on. And you can tell, and you can block those people from coming in. However, yes, when some do get in, train your users to understand that, hey, if someone asks you to confirm your data and you click on the link to go to that data, well, why don't you not click on the link? Why don't you go to the website you normally go to log into your bank account and do it that way? Don't follow the email, right? Do it the way you normally do it. And then you'll get around most of these problems.
Where do most of the phishers come from? I mean, that's a loaded question. I mean,
it's a good question, and people ask, where do most spammers come from? Where do most phishers come from? The U.S. passed a while ago an act, the CAN-SPAM Act. You are not allowed to send spam. It's illegal. We'll track you down. And you've seen some prosecutions out there in the world. So what's happened is a lot of these people actually don't work out of the U.S. They work off some island. They work off a foreign country, which doesn't have as great laws to protect them. And they will send you these emails from those countries, and you'll blast you, 100,000, your entire company can get them. All they're looking for is one out of a few to actually take that email and respond. So what I would tell you is they're not going to stop. No one's going to legislate spam. No one's going to legislate phishers. You, as an enterprise, as a service provider, you need to stop it yourself. And you can't stop it with things like, for example, URL filtering. You can't stop it with things like antivirus, which looks into emails and looks for URLs. But ultimately, train your users. You got to train your employees.
So how trained are most employees and most enterprises today?
I think, the best training for someone, frankly, is simply to show them what's happened. And that's what we do with our users. What we say, what's happened out there? And I could point to an act where when the great, government, presidential election was going on, a bunch of people got emails which said, hey, are you a John Kerry fan? Donate. Here's how you donate. You go to the website, it's a perfectly valid John Kerry website, it says donate. You enter your money and they steal your money. Wow. Giving examples like that, I think, hits people hard, right? They're like, wait a minute, I actually might have done that. Or, that kind of thing scares them. And in many cases, the best way to educate users is to scare them into realizing that it really is a threat. What I would say is when you look at your email, don't mindlessly click the URLs in it, right? Go to the normal path you go to access your financial sites and so on. That's a better vehicle to go into them.
I agree. So where does content security get placed, on the endpoint or on the network?
The answer is going to be both. Because, like I said, layered security is the way to go. at the perimeter of a network is the first place to stop threats from coming in, right? If you wait till it gets on the endpoint, it's in your network. The perimeter of the network, whether it is worms through IPS, viruses through traditional AV software, spyware, spam, and so on, stop it at the perimeter of your network, in front of your servers, in front of your clients. Get as much of that out of the way as you can. What's left for the desktop, that's what the desktop should do. There are different technologies that work best on the network and the desktop. You talked about worms, network worms. Frankly, you need networking gear to stop network worms. No desktop software is going to prevent 100% of these worms, right? That's what IPS is for. Network IPS stops network worms. Viruses are another problem. They're actually, the first thing I always say to someone for viruses, get something on your endpoint. Get it on your laptop. Because viruses on the network can be stopped, but it's kind of the second layer of stopping it on your network. You need to stop it first on your endpoint. I could go down every single technology and tell you, you need networking and endpoint. Here's the one you deploy first, endpoint, then network. And it would vary. The two examples I gave you were network worms, start at the network, IPS, then move to the endpoint. Viruses, start at your desktop, then go to gateway AV. And you could go down the rest of the list, and it works like that.
Really good advice, really simply stated. So now, what's the role of the enterprise in implementing content security, and what's the role of the service provider?
Sure. Frankly, until recently, it's been left to the enterprise. The enterprise has, every enterprise, every branch office, every main office has had to defend for themselves. They've had to deploy network IPS to stop worms and Trojans and DOS attacks. They've had to deploy gateway AV to stop phishing, for example, or viruses, and so on, and then move to the endpoint as well. Nowadays, what we see is service providers realizing as they deploy things like IPTV or as they deploy things like, you know, streaming media to their customers, we'd rather not deliver a service that is insecure, right? We want to differentiate ourselves on the fact that the service we're delivering to our end customers is secure. So service providers are now entering the realm of, hey, we're not just delivering bandwidth, we're not delivering pipes, we're delivering clean pipes, clean of all this junk that's hitting these enterprises. Very early on, but I would say they're tackling it. And how they tackle it could have a huge effect among the industry. If a service provider came to you and said, I'm going to send you 2 megs of bandwidth, or he said, I'm going to send you 2 megs of clean bandwidth, no spam, you know, no viruses, no worms, that's an entirely different proposition for an enterprise. And that's, I think, what service providers are now seeing.
So in a sense, you're partnering more closely with them than you have historically. And are you co-developing products together? And
I would say we are working with them. We work with them on their core infrastructures, their routing infrastructure, and so on. We're there, right? We're already partners with them. Now we're partnering with them to help them enable these differentiated services. In many cases, it'll come with our products. It'll be solutions. They'll develop portions of it, like the management infrastructure in many cases. But the same networking gear we have that protects enterprises against this, much of that knowledge that we have can be leveraged to the carriers for which we already are great partners with. So for, you know, for us, it's a great area to be in, and we're happy the carriers are looking at this.
Yeah. No, it's so great, and it's also, so you won't worry about them taking your ideas and using them where they don't want, you don't want them to or anything like that.
No, not. Yeah. There are carriers in many cases, you know, they're smart people, very smart people, and they realize what's going to make money, and I think they're realizing now, hey, security, it can make a lot of money.
So what's on the horizon for the security products besides this co-partnering and this co-development?
One of the big things we've seen in the industry recently is not only the number of different attacks. You mentioned phishing, spam, viruses, worms. We have solutions to protect against all of those. But what we're seeing is within that framework, people are now, for example, trying to use P2P and IM now to attack people. Or they're trying to use these new ways of communicating to launch the same attacks. So if I was to tell you, yes, I can block worms when you're browsing or when email. Now someone introduces Skype. Okay? How does that influence now with the landscape? So we've seen a lot of uptick on P2P and IM usage. Over, in some cases, 50% of people's traffic is P2P and IM. So obviously what we're doing is making sure proactively our solutions handle all these threats through these different attack vectors. And that's something enterprises need to be aware of. Because frankly, most enterprises, there's no policy that says no P2P and IM, right? Their users are, you know, instant messaging, using Napster, and they need to be realizing that, hey, most threats nowadays, a lot of them come in through those vehicles. So they need P2P and IM aware equipment, and that's what we do.
Great. Very provocative. Sanjay, thank you very much for this podcast.
Absolutely.
And for any of our listeners, if you have questions for Sanjay, please go to juniper.net and select communities.